The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon.
Our guest today is Mr. Preston Dennett. Preston began investigating UFOs and the paranormal in 1986, when he discovered that his family, friends, and co-workers were having dramatic, unexplained encounters. Since then, over 37 years, he has interviewed hundreds of witnesses and investigated a wide variety of paranormal phenomena. He is a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, a ghost hunter, a paranormal researcher, and the author of more than 30 books and over 100 articles on UFOs and the paranormal. His articles have appeared in such magazines as Fate, Atlantis Rising, the MUFON UFO Journal, Paranormal Magazine, and many others. His writing has been translated into several different languages. He has appeared on numerous radio and television programs, including Coast to Coast, History Channel's Deep Sea UFOs, and UFO Hunters. His research has been presented in the L.A. Times, the L.A. Daily News, the Dallas Morning News, and other newspapers. He has taught classes on various paranormal subjects and lectures across the United States. Mr. Dennett was a guest on this show back in September of 2013, and we are pleased to have him on again today. So, welcome back, Preston.
Thanks very much. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. But much has gone down in recent time, right?
Oh, yeah. Times are changing.
Right, they are. But now, for those of our listeners who aren't aware or don't recall, remind us how you first got involved with the UFO, UAP phenomenon.
Yeah, it was kind of accidental, synchronistic in a way. As you mentioned, I found out my family, friends, and coworkers were having encounters. But I was a skeptic. I mean, I was a complete diehard skeptic. Mm-hmm. Would not even look at the evidence. I wasn't interested in the subject. I was sure it wasn't real. But that all changed November 17, 1986. There was a very famous sighting by a Japanese airliner over Alaska. Captain Kenju Tarochi, you may have heard of this case. It's pretty well known. But the news report was very tongue-in-cheek, very short, very joking, not serious. But they showed the pilot. And I thought, wow, this poor man, he's got to be deluded. He's lying. But it interested me enough, just barely, to ask my brother Mark, because he had said he'd seen a UFO, and I just didn't want to hear it. That was some years earlier. But now I was ready, I guess. And he described a really amazing sighting of a metallic disc where he and his two friends basically chased this object down Reseda Boulevard. That's in Southern California where I lived at that time.
They chased it, huh?
Chased it for about 15 minutes, yeah.
Wow.
real close to them. I mean, it was treetop level. It was silent. Your classic disc with the dome and little lights on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I found out, yeah, a lot of people I knew were having major encounters, including, you know, my sister-in-law saw grays. And my other sister-in-law, yeah, gray aliens.
Wow.
Two of them. And it turned out my other sister-in-law, my brother's wife, Mark, his wife, saw little blue beings when she was a little girl.
Mm.
And yeah, people at work, I brought it up. Boy, that was a mistake because they were electrified. They're like, oh my gosh, me and my whole family saw UFOs darting around. And another lady's like, oh, one followed us home from the library. She had missing time. And she's describing it to me, obviously having no idea what missing time means.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, there wasn't, you know, a whole lot on the subject in the media. So yeah, that hit home for me. And that's what drew me into becoming a member of MUFON, becoming a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network.
Mm-hmm. So back then, you were wary of even telling people about it. But once you told them about it, they had a story for you. Is that right?
Yes. I was scandalized. I could not believe it. All these people I loved and trusted and thought I knew, I did not know them. That's kind of how I felt.
Mm.
Because they didn't tell me. I'm like, how could you keep this secret from me?
Mm.
I said, you would not have believed me. You didn't believe me.
Right.
Can't argue with that.
And that's how they keep the secret in plain sight, huh?
Exactly. Yeah, I always tell people, if you're skeptical, I challenge you to ask those you love and trust. Because we all know, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 people. Ask those people, and I think you'll get a real shock.
Yeah.
I certainly did.
Yeah, I told my sister that my sister was a skeptic. And I say was. And I told her, you know, because we had a sighting when we were kids. And I said, I tell you what, you tell 10 people, not together, because they all have to stick together, you know?
Right.
But tell them separately about your sighting, and you'll find that 4 out of 5 of them, 9 out of 10 of them are going to have a story for you. And a little while later, she took me up on that, and she said, you're right. You're right. I told people, I told friends about it, and some relatives, and they had a story for, most of them had a story for me. So
yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, I remember reading a quote from J. Allen Hynek, who's, of course, you know, the astronomical consultant for Blue Book.
Mm.
1 in 40 people have been taken on board a craft. No, that's not possible. That's millions of people. I would know someone. And that's really what got me to ask everybody I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I found people I knew, I loved and trusted. We had missing time and so forth.
Well, you just found another one.
Yeah, so, it's happened to me too, so I know how people feel.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was my first real sighting. I mean, that I recognized. Now, even now, I'm still going back through my history as a childhood and finding little events that were clues. But this was 1992, and you know, when I found out it was real, it was 1986. I was 21 years old, so pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still fairly young. I think, 27?
Okay.
And I was talking to my brother Mark and his wife, Christy, about UFOs, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the middle of a huge investigation of a wave of sightings over my hometown of Topanga Canyon. I'd called the police. I was going door to door. I was calling people up, cold calling them.
Mm-hmm.
And just a huge, probably one of the biggest investigations I've done to this day. So I was just, my head was spinning about all of this. And it got late. I'm like, I have to go home. You know, I work full time. I did back then. And it was, yeah, Sunday night, I think. And I'm driving home. Just left their house in Woodland Hills. 2 minutes down the street. About to go to my condominium complex in Canoga Park. This is in Southern California. And I coming around this corner, and I saw what I thought at first was a bird, you know, 200, 300 feet, swooping down towards my car. This is late at night. You don't normally see, you know, birds flying around late at night like that. And I looked up and I'm like, well, that's not a bird. That almost looks like a firecracker. It was late July, and that's kind of where my mind went. I'm like, well, maybe someone's shooting off another fireworks. But I knew instantly it wasn't, because this darn thing came right down over the hood of my car, and it was an orb about as big as my fist, bigger than a golf ball, bright white, yellow, a solid sort of orb. And it stops right in front of my windshield, right in front of my face, 2 feet away. And then it starts darting back and forth in front of my windshield 2-3 times, stops again, scoots forward, dips down right in front of my car, almost scraping the road there, and then goes straight up. And the last thing I remember is gripping my steering wheel and watching this thing go straight up. Boom, it's all erased from my mind. That entire incident. I don't remember driving home. I should have and would have turned right around and said, Mark, Christy, you're not going to believe I saw this thing. I didn't do that. I forgot the whole thing for months. And one day it just popped into my head. It took me a couple of years to realize. I'm like, that's a classic case of missing time.
Yeah. But yeah. You didn't realize it at the time. But, I mean, you didn't remember anything at the time. But a couple months later, that you say it popped into your head?
Spontaneously.
Wow.
Which, you know, as I'm sure you know, does happen.
Oh, yeah.
And I've interviewed enough people who say, oh, we're driving along, and this saucer landed right in front of our car on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Went up, and we didn't talk about it. None of us even remembered it. And I get angry at them. I'm like, what do you mean? How could you not talk about something like that? Why didn't you talk? How could you forget it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I kept hearing that. And I'm like, this is really hard for me to understand. Mm-hmm. But once it happens to you, you sort of get a little inkling.
Right.
What that's like, at least.
Well, my whole family had a close encounter sighting, and we just went back into the house and didn't say another word about it, as if, you know, it never happened.
Isn't that weird? People get this weird casual attitude, like, yeah, it's a flying saucer. Yeah. It's on TV.
Yeah, right. That's right. We just went back to bed, and that was it. But so these orange orbs, I hear a lot about them. What do you, I'm sure you have heard a lot about them in your investigation. What do you attribute these to? Can't be, I say it can't be because, you know, we can't wrap our heads around it. But to my way of thinking, there can't be little aliens inside these orbs. So what do you attribute these orbs?
I can really only speculate, but having, you know, certainly read volumes about UFOs, as you can see in the background, those are UFO books.
to our radio listeners, I can affirm there are a lot of books behind it.
I've certainly read about that and interviewed a lot of people who've seen these little things, and they often will precede a major encounter.
Okay.
These little things will go up into a saucer, and the next thing they know, they're being pulled on board. I think that they're probably probes, okay, or a little way of checking out the area, or, you know, I'm not entirely certain. I don't think they're, like you say, little craft with tiny little ETs in them.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that they're little unmanned probes. I'm not sure how else to put it. There are spirit orbs as well, but I think spirit orbs are generally more amorphous. And sort of, because this was hard-edged. I mean, I could see that this was a hard-edged object.
Yeah.
I think it's technology. I can't be sure about that.
Spirit orbs would have a tail behind them, wouldn't they?
Well, I'm still trying to wrap my head around how to tell the difference between them. But yeah. Because, you know, getting involved in UFO research led definitely to studying the paranormal. On ghosts and past lives and out-of-body experiences and remote viewing and Bigfoot, that eventually reared its ugly head.
I've had Stan Gordon on the show before, and are you familiar with Stan?
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I was leery about having him on the show because he's mostly into Bigfoot, I thought. And I thought, ah, that's cryptozoology. That isn't UFOs. But it's just amazing how over the years, they see Bigfoot in the presence of a UFO very often.
Yeah.
And we don't find remains of deceased Bigfoot. So where do they go? Where do they come from? Where do they go? Is there a connection? I'm beginning to think, yeah, there is. Be it extraterrestrial or other dimensional. And I've had enough guests on the show that allude to the fact that, yeah, it is other dimensional as opposed to other planets. But maybe it's a bit of both. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think one precludes the other. We're interdimensional beings.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably all life forms do have interdimensional aspects to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see why ETs wouldn't. I think by all accounts, where ETs are exactly what they appear to be. I really do. I think that's the evidence speaks best to that. It really accounts for all the stories we see better than any other theory.
And what do they appear to be?
humanoids, beings like us.
Yeah.
I think they are from other planets. I really do.
Yeah.
I know people talk about interdimensional beings. Well, yeah. I think they probably have a real good grasp of that,
yeah,
technologically speaking and psychically for that matter.
Yeah.
Bigfoot, I think, is probably a biological being too that leaves footprints and hair samples and fecal samples, and you can smell it.
Yeah.
But they are. I mean, because that's how I got dragged into Bigfoot was a gentleman up in Canyon Country, not far from, Southern California, but right off the edge of the LA National Forest, which is huge. You wouldn't know it, but there's a vast wilderness area right outside of LA, metropolis.
Mm.
It's got a long history of Bigfoot. But this guy had a UFO land in his backyard. It's a pretty remote area where he was, and then had a Bigfoot sighting the next day. And that was followed by a poltergeist outbreak in his house.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
So there we go. Yeah, there you got the Bigfoot, a physical being connected with spiritual.
Yeah, there's a connection there.
There's a connection.
Yeah. You know, I ended up studying Bigfoot in some depth. I wrote a book on it and more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear to me that it is a real phenomenon. The evidence is overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of people who encounter Bigfoot don't encounter a UFO. And the same is true vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
But there are enough cases where they coincide exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, there's a lot. I'm like, oh, what's going on here? And I don't think Bigfoot is extraterrestrial, honestly.
Yeah.
I think that they're being contacted by ETs like people are.
And right.
They're probably sentient, at least some of them.
Right.
And yes, having researched enough Bigfoot cases, I do think they can do things psychically that we're only just beginning to experience ourselves and understand, such as turn invisible or
and
dimensionally.
Like the rest of the phenomenon, I don't think we can really, will ever wrap our heads around what's going on. I need to take a break just for a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station that's making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with the author and UFO and paranormal researcher, Mr. Preston Dennett. So you say, let's see, you've written so many books. I think you've touched on every subject. But your latest one is entitled Symmetry, A True UFO Adventure. And I went to Amazon and they have a little sample of it, of your book. And it just caught my eye. I said, I got to get this book. So I ordered the Kindle version and I'm into it. So tell us your main character. I think I say character, and it's not really a character. It's a story. Is Dolly. Now, is Dolly a pseudonym?
No.
Her name.
That's her name, Dolly Saffron. She's a nurse, well, former nurse, used to work for the Department of Defense, was a lifeguard, a zookeeper, has quite a resume, actually, security guard, and a great witness, super intelligent. But boy, it was such a treat to make contact with her. She reached out to me, and it became pretty clear to me very soon that her case was extensive. And as she grew to trust me and shared her story with me, I realized that her story was far more extensive than I initially realized. She's a fully conscious contactee.
That's rare, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I run across it, certainly. But a lot of people do have, of course, missing time. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have a lot of fear surrounding their experiences. And certainly she did, too, early on. But at age 14, she had a had enough of the missing time and kind of broke through that barrier, got past the fear and started having fully conscious experiences from age 14 onwards. She's now in her 60s. So she was having them, you know, weekly. So her case is easily, and I can say this with full confidence, the most extensive I've ever investigated and really even read about. I mean, there are a lot of extensive cases out there. And I've interviewed a handful of people that I would say are fully conscious of their encounters, but not to the extent that she is.
Tell our listeners a little bit about her encounters.
From age, they began at a very young age. Age one, two, she remembered being pulled out of her house. Once she was missing for hours, they found her at the local convenience store. Some 7 miles away. Not figured out how she got there.
How old was she?
She was two at that time, 2 years old. At age seven, she had a UFO come down. She does remember this very clearly, though really wasn't connecting the dots, but was pulled on board and got to meet a tall gray who says, you know, you can call me Mama. It was a very pleasant experience. And it was really at age 14, like you mentioned, that she had a UFO come down. This is 1973. She lived in the Florida Everglades. And this craft comes right down behind her house. There's portholes, and she can see two little grays looking out at her. And that did scare her. She dived under her bed. And that's when her room filled with light. She woke up the next morning and did not remember what happened. She had someone else's pajamas on. Inside out and backwards. So she knew at this point, this is physical evidence. She knew at this point what was happening. She'd been taken. She knew it. And her mom, she wanted to talk to her mom. They're out in the country there, so she doesn't have a whole lot of people she can talk to about it. And her dad was a military guy. He happened to be there that day. But her mom didn't want to talk about it. She hated the subject. It frightened her. Her mom didn't want to hear it. And that's when the radio comes on and there's a guy talking about local sightings. Two police officers, not too many miles away, saw UFOs that night. So there was more evidence. And so she's losing her mind. And her dad says, go meditate. Her dad was a contactee. She did not realize it at this time. As I'm sure you know, David, contactees sort of run in families.
Right.
So he kind of knew what was going on with her and told her to go in to the room and meditate. Which she did. And she just sat down and she was able to break through that missing time barrier. And she recalled being taken on board. And this was a real extensive encounter. But in brief, she's pulled on board. She instantly threw up on board the craft because she was staring at a gray and she recognized her. This was Mama, the tall gray she had been having contact with for years, but forgot all of it. Or it was in this hazy dream state. She's fully conscious now. And then the ship itself starts talking. It's like, do you remember me? And she's like, yes, I do. She calls him Talata. That's not his real name. But yeah, the ships themselves are embodied living entities, which is something I'd had heard from many contactees.
I have heard that too.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Even when people who have sightings say this craft acted like it was a living being.
Exactly.
And then other contactees have stated, who have been on board, say, yes, that's exactly what they are.
Yeah, I found that so interesting because I had some questions about that. Dolly was able to fill in a lot of the blanks that I had.
Like what?
Experience. Well, that's one of them. You know, what about the difference between short little AI grays that are not emotional at all and ones, you know, the other grays, which are emotional and do have feelings and do understand human emotions? Because there are people who would tell me, oh, these guys have no emotions. And then I get other people like, well, I had the most loving experience. They were great. So I was a little conflicted about it.
But so is it the case that the grays that do have emotions and feelings have made these little robots, these shorter grays that really don't have feelings because they're machines?
Yeah, it's essentially exactly right. Biological androids, I guess you could call them. And
okay.
Yeah, Dolly described that in great detail and basically echoed what other contactees were telling me, and certainly that I've read about. Like Whitley Strieber talked about how he saw them all stacked up like cordwood. I asked Dolly about that. She's like, oh, yeah, they can turn them off and on. They're not born. They don't die. These are not living beings as we would think of it. So that was one of the things that she cleared up for me. She also was taught how to fly these craft, pilot them.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, wow, that's interesting, because I've heard this from just a smattering of people I've interviewed.
Yeah.
And she verified that these craft are flown psychically, that their technology is very much integrated to psychic ability and, you know, spiritual abilities.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole spiritual aspect to this phenomena that a lot of the nuts and bolts folks don't really look into, which I understand, especially back then. It's a big pill to swallow when you start talking not only about UFOs, but telepathy, levitation, and all the healings and all the stuff that comes with UFO encounters.
Right.
But yeah, Dolly was taught how to fly the craft, and on her first encounter there, not her first, but the first fully conscious, they took her to Saturn to see the planet Saturn, flew through the rings, flew around the whole thing. That thrilled me, because I had just interviewed not too long ago a gentleman by the name of Jay Gardner, who was 12 years old when he had that exact same experience.
Hmm.
I thought, wow, that's what Leo Sprinkle, you know, a researcher,
mm-hmm.
described happening to him. And Ray Fowler, he said that as well. Ray Fowler, you know, the investigator for Betty Andreasen.
Right.
So, and I've got other cases like that. They took her to the moon as well. I'm like, wow, that's what happened to another guy I interviewed, a Navy medic, Kevin Kamen. They took him to the moon, flew around it.
There is a lot of speculation that there are bases or a base on the backside of the moon, the side that never shows itself to Earth. Didn't Dolly state that indeed is a fact?
Yep. They absolutely showed it to her, explained it a little bit. Some of the stuff there is real old and not active, which I had already learned from other contactees. And in fact, a NASA insider is the one who got me interested in the moon.
Mm-hmm.
He was a photographer. And he's like, there's stuff up there. You better believe it. You should look into it. And I did, and was shocked, because I had kind of overlooked that. That was years and years before I met Dolly. But yeah, they took her and they showed her it. Absolutely.
There was supposed to be an astronaut that is said, what, going around the moon, that there is a base on the moon, some kind of base on the moon. There's activity. It looks like mining activity or whatever on the far side of the moon. And this could be a rumor, a conspiracy theory, call it what you will, totally untrue. But according to Dolly, this is true.
Yeah, and many other contactees for that matter. And if you look into the literature on the moon, you'll see that strange lights and, you know, formations have been seen since we invented the telescope. Herschel himself saw stuff up there. Royal Astronomical Society asked for reports from citizens, from amateur astronomers and professional. Mm-hmm. They received like 3,000 reports and said, stop, that's enough. Yeah, they called them transient lunar phenomena, TLP. This is well known amongst, you know, UFO researchers and selenologists, moon researchers.
Okay.
They know that there's something going on up there. This is one of the big cover-ups that one day, when NASA finally decides to tell the truth, because they're not, that's going to be a big deal when people realize that there is stuff going on up there.
Yeah. Well, the Pentagon has admitted that UFOs are real, and they're advanced technologies that are not ours. And they've kind of left it there. They didn't broach the abduction phenomenon at all. Kind of so left it there.
I noticed that. I'm glad you said that, because it just is laughable to me that they're showing little tiny objects flitting across that look like balloons, honestly.
Yeah.
Talking about sightings, I'm like, well, what about all the landings that we've got? You know, the thousands of landing trace cases. What about Betty and Barney Hill and Travis Walton and Whit Strieber and Betty Andreas?
Well, we're not going to talk about that.
No. We're not going to talk about Charlie Hickson.
We'll just say that the UFOs are real and leave it at that. Leave it to your imagination. Little bits and pieces. They're letting out dribble here and dribble there. And most of us just say, yeah, we know.
Yeah, we don't need them to find the truth about UFOs. And I would actually discourage people from looking to government for answers, because they lie. They're demonstrably lying.
All right.
That first congressional hearing not too long ago, mm-hmm. they were asked flat out, have we ever shot at UFOs? Remember Daley and Moultrie, the defense guys,
mm-hmm.
were fielding questions. And they said, no, both. Said, no, we've never shot at them. That's demonstrably untrue.
Yeah, I saw that. And I said right out loud, that's not true. What about Truman's order to shoot them down if they don't answer their hail?
Right? All through the 50s, the early 1950s.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Battle of L.A. We shot 1,400 rounds of ammunition.
Right. But we lost a lot of American pilots because of that order to shoot them down. They got shot down. And I'm just worried about, you know, now we're shooting down these spy balloons. If we see some UFO, quote unquote, some unidentified flying object, and we say, oh, that's probably a spy balloon, let's shoot it down. Well, aren't we taking a chance that it's not a spy balloon? And we get shot down, you know?
Well, understandably, they'll defend themselves, but they don't shoot first. No, I think we are the hostile ones, not them. I am not worried about ETs taking over our planet.
No.
I don't think they're here to hurt us. I really don't.
They would have done so by now, don't you think?
Exactly. Yeah, my first book was all about healings, which had 100 cases. And I've now reissued that book, The Healing Power of UFOs, because there's 300-plus documented cases. They're not here to hurt us.
No.
Their main agenda really is healing, it's guiding, it's teaching, it's warning people. That's right. What Malmstrom, the whole Malmstrom incident, which was brought up at the congressional hearings,
mm-hmm.
they said, oh, we have no reporting on the so-called Malmstrom incident. And I just had to laugh. I'm like, you are the head of defense, and you don't know about UFOs coming down and shutting down a dozen nuclear-tipped missiles at Malmstrom Air Force Base? Really? You don't know about that.
And that's not the only base that they had that incident, that type of incident.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is why I'm like, we're not going to get the truth from our government.
No.
I just don't think we ever will, honestly. They're still lying to this day. Just what was it last week? There was a brand new hearing about the AARO, aerial, let's see if I can get this. It's such a mouthful, the aerial anomaly reconnaissance office,
okay.
Which has six goals, which the first three are basically just to study and analyze and catalog this sightings. But then they're like, the last three kind of raised my eyebrows: governance and mitigation of the phenomena. Really? You're going to govern UFO activity? You're going to mitigate it? Good luck with that.
As if they're in charge, right?
Yeah. I think this is, again, pushing forward the so-called ET threat narrative, which seems to be what they're heading towards, which is not true. I don't think the evidence supports that at all.
No. So what kind of evidence you have to have you seen to verify Dolly's account?
That's what I love about Dolly's case. I've interviewed a lot of people, and I have to tell you, many people's UFO accounts are anecdotal. You have to kind of take their word for it. And as a rule, I do try to do what I can to vet a witness, corroborate, you know, what would you call it? Someone who will vouch for their integrity. And to that degree, but Dolly not only has that, she has supporting witnesses. Her ex-husband, her child, friends, her parents all vouched for, not only vouched, but saw stuff as well.
I was going to say they witnessed like an abduction, if they witnessed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, her dad did, her mom did, neighbors did, friends did, her brother. Absolutely. I actually saw her UFOs personally, so I know for a fact her case is real, but goes so far beyond that. She's showed me her medical records, verifying implants, healings, things like this. She also has a photographic evidence that's really outstanding. I'm like, Dolly, you need to put this up on YouTube. And she did. So you can go and look at some of the stuff she's put out there.
What do you search for?
Just her name, Dolly Safran, one word, S-A-F-R-A-N. And you can see the Tolada, the craft, coming down real close. Daylight stuff, still photographs, moving films. She's got really good evidence in support of her case, which she didn't initially have. She decided, you know, I want to go public, but I don't have any photographs. How do you expect me to verify my story? And the ET says, okay, well, we'll give you some. So that was really cool because, yeah, people don't realize it's not that easy to photograph UFOs.
No. Battery usually dies.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like trying to catch a car accident. Probably not a great analogy, but they come and go real quick.
Right.
Unexpectedly. And they will. I talked to one guy who did get some photos, but he had a UFO. He had a brand new digital camera. Pointed it at the UFO, zoom, camera powered down. Turned it away, powered right up.
Yeah, sure.
But it did that three or four times. I had another case where there was 11 people, and three of them were professional photographers. And pretty much they were on Catalina Island. They all had cameras and flashlights and watches, everything electronic down. All of it. All cameras failed. All flashlights failed. All their watches stopped. These are electromagnetic effects. But yeah, it's not easy always to photograph UFOs.
But you saw UFOs on occasion, her UFOs, with your own eyes.
Yep. So I know it's real. I mean, it goes beyond that. I'm having some real major experiences myself that are related to hers, which is cool.
Let me take one more moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Preston Dennett. And he is an author and a UFO researcher, and we're talking about his book, Symmetry, A True UFO Adventure. And I started reading that book of yours, and I just don't want to stop. So it's a page turner. And but you've said that you've seen these UFOs, her UFOs, with your own eyes, and you've seen pictures and what have you. And so what kind of you mentioned a paradigm shift in your book for humankind. And what kind of paradigm shift has Dolly alluded to?
Yeah, I think this is one of the main ET agendas, honestly, is just to let people know the title of your show. You know, we are not alone.
Right.
This is what they really want people to wake up to,
mm-hmm.
Because I think that alone will change people's behavior and let us know that we are not alone in this universe. We do have friends out there. It's time to really shape up. This is one of their main messages, is to wake up to our own psychic abilities. This is another of the main things that they told to Dolly, that this is really important for humankind. And we're seeing that. That is a huge shift, with a lot of attention being paid to paranormal phenomena. So we do see a lot of contactees talking about having healing abilities, past life recall, astral projection, physical levitation. That happened to Dolly, happened to a number of contactees I've interviewed. So this is a big shift that we're seeing right now. People are waking up to the fact that we are immortal beings, in essence.
Mm-hmm.
Death is a lie. And that we do have all these abilities that the ETs are demonstrating constantly. And they come floating into your house. This is not necessarily technology. They have the ability to levitate. And these are things we can do too. And yeah, one of the main things is that we are facing an existential crisis here on Earth with the collapsing of our magnetic fields and coronal mass ejections, CMEs, which if you look into the news and you look into the science of this, you can see that this is a real problem.
Describe this. What are we talking about here?
We're talking about the sun releasing, you know, through sunspots and coronal mass ejection, CMEs,
right?
Solar flares that are so powerful that they can and do and are knocking down our electrical grid.
Mm.
But we're facing, you know, upcoming. This is what Dolly has been told, and you can absolutely verify the science on this. The first one was the Carrington event in 1859, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
which basically did knock down the newly emerging telegraph system. And if you look into the stories on this, it's incredible. I mean, it was lighting up the sky, and I mean, it was doing some crazy things. And that is, as Dolly says, the warning shot. So we're probably going to have one that will knock down the world grid entirely.
Mm.
And this planet is facing a point where it's going to get much worse than that. And when this happens, you know, if we're facing a micronova, which is what Dolly has been taught by the ETs, and not only her, for that matter, some other contactees are talking about this. The ETs will come down in large numbers and scoop people up, those who are ready. And this is a message I've heard from so many contactees. The sky filling with craft.
Yeah. Is this like the religious rapture?
Well, I think that in some ways it may have been interpreted that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I would couch it in religious terms so much as, you know, science, which is verifiable.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah, in essence, it's the same darn thing.
Yeah, it is. I wrote a fictional book called A New Heaven or New Earth. And that was pretty much the basis of the book. They were coming to take humans up and get them out of here before disaster struck. Okay? So there was a lot of things that are in that book, which is fictional, but based upon what has been witnessed by contactees, abductees, just UFO sightings. UFOs doing or making movements that defy the laws of physics and aerodynamics. How do we explain that?
Yeah.
Tried to explain that in this book, but
yeah, the laws as we know it, we don't fully understand. I don't think they're actually defying the laws of physics.
No. What seemingly defies the laws.
Right.
But we, you know, we just don't know everything there is to know about the laws of physics.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me that you put that book out because I think, you know, that shows you are a contactee. I think this is the same message. They're doing everything they can in every which way mm-hmm. to get this message out.
Because mm-hmm.
Some people are just not into the UFO subject. Science fiction is far more popular.
Yeah.
And it's no coincidence, I don't think, that, you know, the ETs are the basic science fiction trope.
Mm-hmm.
That's what most science fiction books are about.
Yeah.
Is contact.
Right.
Which is helping all humanity, you know, acclimatize to the idea that we are not alone.
Mm-hmm. And it makes people think, maybe this is true. Maybe this is what's happening. Maybe there's a kernel of truth in these fictional books. What do you think?
Exactly. I think that's exactly right. What kind of kept me out of the field was, you know, having seen Star Trek and seeing all the human-looking ETs, I'm like, well, it wouldn't be like that. And I'm hearing these reports of human-looking aliens. I'm like, aliens would have tentacles. Come on. They would look like the Blob. Completely different.
Yeah.
Just flat out is not true.
Right.
The humanoid template is universal.
Right.
We are very much like the ETs. And if you talk to the contactees, that is what they're being told.
Mm-hmm.
That is the one of the main messages. It's so funny when Dolly said it, I laughed out loud because she's like, you know, the message they told me is we are you, you are us, we are one. And I'd heard that from, I don't know, about a dozen personally contactees, and certainly read it 1,000 times. We share the same heritage with them. We're all human, humanoid, all of us. We all have the same heritage. So I think that's an important point. And Star Trek got it very close to right. Mm-hmm. I think Gene Roddenberry had some inspiration going on there.
All is one. You mentioned in your book, you mentioned a secret government. Tell us about that and what evidence do you have that it exists?
Yeah, the shadow government, secret government, cabal, Illuminati, one percenters, call it what you will. I think this is well known among UFO researchers
mm-hmm.
and even beyond just the whole UFO community. This is something that I think I hate the term conspiracy theorists. It's a little bit insulting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, there's an enormous amount of evidence of deep underground military bases, black budget that's being secreted away. We don't even know where most of our tax dollars are going. And
right.
I talked to a number personally of what I would call whistleblowers within the military industrial complex who have told me their experiences with this.
Mm.
So yeah, I think the evidence for that is outstanding. I think most major researchers have interviewed whistleblowers. The accounts are in the thousands now. For sure, there are crash retrievals. For sure, we have reverse engineered some of the ET technology to a degree. For sure that this is beyond just what we would think of as mainstream government, but really involving, you know, the oil companies, the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical industries, banking industries. These are the guys who are really behind it. The highest levels of the military, which is not elected. The elected government is not really the ones who are controlling things. So this is a real concern. It's a constitutional crisis. It really is.
So you're saying our government is the puppet for someone else who's pulling the strings. Is that ET that's pulling the strings?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just the greedy, powerful one percenters, public elite, you might call them.
Mm-hmm.
ETs do not, I mean, I'll put it this way. You know, people have asked the ET's flat out, I've got case after case of this. Why don't you just come down and take over? Mm-hmm. They're like, we can't. There are karmic laws. We can only intervene to a degree. We can help those who are helping others. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I started looking at. I'm like, who's being contacted and why? Because it was evenly divided between men and women. It had no basis on blood type or ancestry or education or anything I could find.
Right.
The only real pattern that was immediately apparent to me was it does follow families. Right. So then I started realizing, well, a lot of these contactees are profoundly psychic. That's another pattern for sure. But one that really kind of hit me over the head was when I was studying UFO healing cases. I'm like, why are these people being healed? So many people could use a healing. Mm-hmm. I interviewed this lady from Norway who found out about my healing, UFO healing research. And she wanted to share her case of being healed by Grays of a chronic back condition. And so she described the whole thing. Grays came into her room in brief, you know, healed her with this rod of a chronic back condition that she had gotten from an injury. And so I got all the details. And I'm thinking, why her? And I asked her, did you have encounters as a young girl? Because that's usually the pattern. She's like, no, this is a one-off. I'm like, wow, this is unusual because that's doesn't fit the pattern. And I'm like, well, what do you do for a living? And this is when alarm bells went off. She's like, well, I'm a retired graphics artist, but right now I'm extremely active doing human and animal rights in my country. Please don't use my name. I'm very well known.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because I had just interviewed Michael Carter, who fights against racism and was healed of a blood clot in his leg.
Mm-hmm.
Ding, ding, ding. What's the guy's name? John Hunter Gray. He was an award-winning social worker. He was healed. I'm like, oh my gosh. A lot of the people I'd interviewed were human rights activists, environmentalists, nurses. Dolly's a nurse. Doctors, teachers.
Mm-hmm.
An inventor. Police officers. And musicians, people who are doing good work for humanity in some capacity.
When you mentioned Michael Carter, is this the Reverend Michael Carter?
That's right.
Yep. He was on my show. That's why I have.
Yeah, nice guy.
Yeah, very nice guy.
Yeah, he was healed of a blood clot in his leg. Mm-hmm. And I think I know why. Honestly, it's because they are helping those who help others. It's exactly what they told a lady. A couple, actually, I interviewed who live in Hawaii but had an encounter in Sedona. And they were invited on board. It was a very friendly encounter. And they asked flat out, why don't you just help everyone? And they were told, we can't. It's up to you to solve your own problems.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're the ones who are responsible for the massive division in political ideologies and
right.
wealth and all the divisiveness that we've got going on. That's our doing, that's our fault, and it's our problem to fix. Can you imagine if they handed over healing technology and what would happen? We would abuse it, we'd have overpopulation.
Mm-hmm.
We have a tendency to use technology for nefarious purposes.
But they do seem to pick and choose who they decide to help, right?
To a certain extent. I think if people want to reach out and have contact, it's not that hard to do. Certainly mm-hmm. I did it.
Right.
And I think that they reach out to everyone to a certain extent.
Now, by reaching out, are you talking about meditating?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Or, you know, CE5 work is a very effective way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have I have five brothers and sisters. And my sister was like, well, I've never seen a UFO. I'm like, well, you can. You know, you absolutely can if you want. And having talked to a lot of contactees, and Dolly confirmed this for me, everyone at some level is known by them, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And a simple sighting is contact. This is their fulfilling one of their main agendas, which is, hey, you're not alone. We are out here. This is, you know, they have several major agendas, and that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we see all those sightings over schoolyards. I wrote a book about that. You know the Rua Zimbabwe case?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, where they landed? That's not unique. There was the Westall High School case, the Hillsdale College case, Crestview Elementary, Broadhaven Elementary. And I started connecting the dots. And I found over 100 cases of schoolyard UFO encounters. Mm-hmm. A full one-third involved landings and humanoids. This is absolutely an agenda. Yeah. They're trying to wake us up to their presence. They're trying to heal us. They're teaching us. They're warning us over and over again. If anyone gets a message when they're taken on board, I can tell you what it is without even interviewing you. They're going to warn you about nuclear proliferation, about our warlike ways, greed and corruption, the destruction of the environment, these sort of things. That is what they're concerned about. The Greys have said it. Praying mantis, little blue beings, tall whites, strange humanoids of all kinds, human-looking ETs. It's the same message from all of them.
So in the end, I would that was going to be my question. In the end, what is the underlying message ET had for humanity, according to Dolly? And I think you just answered that question, didn't you?
Yeah, it would be, we're not alone. You, as a human being, have unlimited potential and psychic ability, and it's crucial for all humanity to wake up to that, to your abilities to do telepathy and remote viewing and past life recall and healing and all of it, and recognize that we are one. That's a second message. A third would be to treat each other with love and kindness. Stop destroying your environment. That's a third message. Fourth is that we are facing some real tough times up ahead, and it's time we prepare and recognize that. So these are the main messages that they're trying to put forth to Dolly and certainly the vast majority of contactees out there.
Tough times up ahead. Are we talking about global warming, climate change?
No, not so much global warming. I think that's probably part more propaganda than honest the truth. But in terms of the destruction of the environment, the poisoning in our food and water,
mm-hmm.
the maltreatment of the people by our own governments,
mm-hmm.
the collapse of our magnetic field, the probability, let's face it, that at some point that they will come and do a worldwide landing. Mm-hmm. Open official contact is inevitable because they are out there and the truth can't be hidden forever.
Right.
Disclosure will happen one way or another, not from government, right. I don't think. Right.
But. I've often said, you know, when people say, when will the, ET presence be told to the public? And I've said, when ET decides that they're going to.
Yeah. And let's face it, they have. Mm-hmm. They have put on enough displays that we know for sure. This is a real phenomenon. The evidence is there in the public arena, if you're willing to look for it.
Right. Preston Dennett, where can people go to find out more about your work?
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. I do have a website, PrestonDennett.Weebly.com. You can certainly look at all my books and contact me through the website. I'm all over social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I have a YouTube channel. My books are on Amazon and other online retailers. And yeah, thanks for having me on the show, David. I truly appreciate it. It's been awesome.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. It's been great. And I hope to have you on again because you have so many books we need to talk about.
I'd appreciate that. Yeah, okay. Anytime.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archive shows. Or click on the Talk Shows button, then the We Are Not Alone button for the latest show archives. And please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomena. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.